Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, November 24th. Little good economic news on this Thanksgiving Eve. The weekly new jobless claims number came out this morning, and I read it was the lowest single-week number in 50 years. So despite the new rise in COVID cases this month, it doesn't seem to be shutting down the economy very much. That's different from parts of Europe right now. Austria, have you heard this, with its surge being worse than our surge right now, has ordered a lockdown and a national vaccine mandate, not just certain workers, everyone except the medically or religiously exempt. And they are expecting economic losses as well as public health gains from the lockdown. But another thing in this country that is affecting most people is the recent rise in gasoline prices as the holiday has approached. And yesterday, President Biden announced a release of oil from what's called the National Petroleum Reserve. And he acknowledged the tension that I'm sure many of you are thinking about right away between his recent climate promises about getting off of fossil fuels and flooding the market with them now to ease the short-term pain.
It will take time, but before long, you should see the price of gas drop where you fill up your tank. And in the longer term, we will reduce our reliance on oil as we shift to clean energy.
So, President Biden yesterday. Now, before we bring on our first guest to talk seriously about all this, two bits of satire. This first one was sent to me by a friend. I'm not sure of the original source, but if anyone else has seen this going around, you can let us know. It says, having observed the activities at COP26, I have set an ambitious target to phase out my alcohol consumption within the next 29 years as part of an impressive plan to improve my health. The program will see me continue to drink as normal for the foreseeable future before reducing consumption in 2051 when I turn 92. I want to assure friends and family it will not affect my drinking plans in the short or medium term. It is important not to rush the switch to non-alcoholic beverages. It is not realistic to transition to zero alcohol overnight. This requires a steady, phased approach where nothing changes for at least two decades. Indeed, I may need to make alcohol investments in beer consumption, more investments in the short term to make sure no night is worse off. I also intend to bring forward the drinking credits earned from the days I haven't drunk over the past 40 years, meaning the final end date for consumption may actually be 2060. So whoever wrote that, I thought it was hilarious and very on point, so I thought I would share it with you. And then there was Stephen Colbert last night helping to explain the idea of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
For those who don't know, the Strategic Reserve is a series of caverns filled with fossil fuel and strategically located inside Rudy Giuliani's head.
Thank you, Stephen Colbert. I think you nailed it. With us now, Timothy Gardner, energy and climate reporter for Reuters. Timothy, thanks for some time today. Welcome to WNYC. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Great to be here.
Did Colbert get that right? Is the Strategic Petroleum Reserve located in Rudy Giuliani's brain?
It's a little further away than that. It's basically a series of caverns, that's right, along the Texas and Louisiana coasts. And it's heavily guarded by patrols and fenced in. I actually went there in 2016. And to give you an idea of how remote it is, one of the security guards told me that that despite the fences, they actually have problems from time to time with alligators getting in. And that's because the marine birds will take the baby alligators from the eggs and then drop them once they are squirming too much. So, it's a pretty remote location. You can't even see the oil there because it is in these salt caverns that they sort of carved out and filled with 600 million barrels of oil.
Why do we have these strategic reserves? Whoever came up with them was probably not thinking about a shortage caused by a pandemic.
No, indeed, they're decades old. The idea came about when Henry Kissinger was Secretary of State under Nixon, and it was in response to the Arab oil embargo of the early 70s, 73, 74, caused... was daily news on television, and consumers, drivers would line up at the gas stations, in some cases for miles. And, you know, the more people saw that on TV, the more they'd rush out and fill up their tank, even if they only needed a gas. So it caused a lot of panic. And so Henry Kissinger's idea was to get together a group of oil-consuming nations, now called the International Energy Agency, and it's based in Paris, but also to create the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, to fill it up. So, you know, Congress mandated it, and it started filling up in 1977, and now has about 600 million barrels, which is... we in the U.S. use about 20 million barrels. So under the International Energy Agency, the U.S. is required to keep 90 days worth of imports in there. And
we've dipped into this reserve fund before. You talked about creation of it during the 1970s. We've dipped into this reserve fund before during this century, haven't we?
Yeah, usually it's used in response to hurricanes that hit the Gulf Coast, and the reserve can be used either to loan oil. So, you know, the government, the Department of Energy, says to oil companies, "Hey, we're going to loan you this oil." They take it up. The companies take it up, and then they have to repay it back with interest at a later date. Or the president can declare that there's an emergency, which has happened in times of war, in the 90s, in the Gulf War, and this century when there was a civil war in Libya.
You reported that this release of oil is being done in conjunction with other countries, including China. Are other countries experiencing similar gasoline price increases to ours?
Well, yeah, that was an unprecedented move by President Biden yesterday to do this in conjunction with the world's other top oil consumers. So that's China and India and Japan and South Korea. And that's outside of the IEA that I mentioned, the Paris-based IEA. India and China are associate members of that group, but they're not full members. And so this is a new relationship of consuming nations, oil-consuming nations, sort of banding together to push back against Saudi Arabia and Russia holding back production. Both of those big producers could pump more oil, but they are only doing it slowly as the world recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic.
Listener tweets, it's around 329 to 349 in Jersey City right now, which is why I was shocked to see 499 coming back from the Guggenheim last weekend at a station on 11th near the Lincoln Tunnel. So I don't know. Maybe that's not surprising. I think they always get you at those stations if you waited till you right before you have to go through the tunnel, and you haven't filled up yet. But here's Patrick. Oh, Patrick in Croton hung up. No, he's back. Let me go right to Patrick, who is in California. Patrick, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. No, I'm just back from California, where it makes you pine for the deep environs of New York here. I live in a village up the river, as they used to say, from the city. And typically you see 459, 469 in Beverly Hills, which is where I was. And some places are above $5, particularly if you're around Rodeo Drive. So I guess that's gas stations to the stars. But in Croton this morning, I filled up for $3.49 for regular.
Right. Thank you. So we're hearing, Timothy, a lot of three-something in the metro area, $4.99 at the entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel, if that was accurate. But you heard Patrick's story from California, and he was talking about Rodeo Drive, you know, the gasoline stations of the stars. But that $6 a gallon gasoline was out in Eastern California. That was from Mono County near Yosemite. So what goes on to make gasoline prices that disparate between one coast and another?
A couple of reasons. So state taxes. Each state has the ability to add whatever kind of taxes it wants to on top of the price of gasoline. And California has always had higher taxes on gasoline, in part due to the interest in alternatives, in electric vehicles or whatever. And that's led to acceptance for higher taxes in that state. But also, the California market is separate, basically operates as a separate market from the rest of the country, because you have their oil is basically coming from abroad and from Alaska, as the pipelines that are, you know, in the Texas and Louisiana and East Coast, they don't make it all the way out to California. So that operates as a separate market, and it's a little bit of a different beast, and it'll take longer for this action by President Biden to have an effect there.
I'm seeing Linda in East Windsor. $3.29 is a steal here, says Linda in that part of New Jersey. These prices that we're hearing, they don't seem outrageously high. I mean, historically, right? There have been plenty of years in the 21st century where people in New York and New Jersey are paying in the mid $3 for a gallon of gasoline. So what's the crisis here? I know things were artificially low last year when, as you were describing, because some, you know, the economies were locked down in so many places, people weren't driving like they did in the past. So production was cut and prices came down because there wasn't demand. If it's only back up to like $3.50 a gallon, wasn't it that for many years in the 21st century? And if that's right, what's the big crisis here for releasing oil from the petroleum reserve?
That's absolutely right. As I said earlier, in 2008, oil prices were $47 a barrel, and gasoline prices were way above what we're paying now. With the high prices, you also have this huge jump in inflation. That's 30%. Food prices have gone up. That's also related to higher prices of fuels, but also because of difficulty getting workers and all the supply bottlenecks. So I think the last thing a president wants is high motor fuel prices on top of high inflation. And it's just numbers that people are seeing all the time. And when people go out to restaurants these days, the prices are much higher, and they don't want to see the prices of gasoline go higher.
But it's not like bringing down the price of gasoline, if it even comes down, from releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is going to make the prices go down at the restaurant or at the grocery store. Is it? Maybe for people who are food insecure, we should have a strategic food reserve instead.
That'd be a great idea. And I think there are some efforts along that way, but certainly not like a national strategic petroleum reserve that you can announce with and get headlines and extreme interest in.
But is the anticipation for you as an economics? Well, you're an environment and energy reporter, but to the extent that that overlaps with being an economic reporter, do you have any reason to expect that the price of food at the grocery store increasing as part of inflation right now will come down or not go up as fast because of this release of oil?
So the oil price has fallen a little bit, well, not a little bit, about 10% since late October. And when news of this release, and especially the coordinated release with other consumers around the world, it's fallen from 85 to about 80 in terms of the price of crude oil. So in a sense, it already has had an effect. And analysts were beginning to talk about without action, you could have seen oil going up to $100 a barrel. So I think you're right that there might be muted effect on this action taking prices down a lot, but there was also to go up by quite a bit, which I was speaking to oil historian Daniel Yergin yesterday, and he believes that you're not going to see so many forecasts for $100 barrel of oil in the near term anyway.
Liz in Maplewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I just been listening to all this and also listening to people I know griping about the gas prices that you just pointed out are not actually that high. And these are like some same folks whose equity in their homes has risen so much in the past year or two, whose, you know, portfolios are looking better than ever. And I just think there's a lack of context and like perspective, especially for people, middle class people, upper middle class people, for people on the margins. Obviously, food prices and gas prices are extremely, you know, that's right in front of them. But I think for a lot of people, it's just like something to complain about, and it's not actually affecting their vacation plans or their, you know, anything else that they might be doing with respect to the gas prices.
And you said to our screener something about housing prices?
Well, I think people, if you own a home, basically anywhere, your home value has increased so much and you're sitting on equity, you're sitting on money that you can borrow against. And, you know, like the context of the gas prices compared with all these other things, it's sort of like, okay, $3.50 a gallon, like, I don't know, it doesn't seem something insurmountable for a good number of people.
We need a strategic housing reserve, maybe more than a strategic oil reserve. Timothy, some environmentalists are suggesting that this oil price spike, instead of being relieved as quickly as Biden can, could be used as a disincentive to use fossil fuels and accelerate the transition to non-climate polluting sources that Biden has promised in the longer run. Is that a real option?
Biden certainly is walking a balancing wire on this. He and his energy secretary have emphasized that they're trying to do this move for the middle class consumer, the middle class drivers who may not own a home. They may, you know, they may be renters, so they may not have experienced this huge bump in home prices as they're trying to recover from the pandemic. People in their household are not able to go back to work yet. This is done for that, this move. So, but the Biden administration also definitely wants to get electric vehicles moving. There's a lot in the legislation, the Democrat bill that they want to pass, reconciliation bill that they want to be the next bill to pass after the, you know, the bipartisan infrastructure bill is passed. So there's a lot of incentives for electric vehicles in there that they want to move forward.
Listener tweets, we're paying $2.80 in Memphis, Tennessee. Another caller tells our screener, $2.98 in Mississippi, $3.28 at Costco in Oceanside on Long Island. So that's kind of the range, I guess, right? From $2.80 in Memphis, assuming these are being accurately reported, from around $2.80 in Memphis to around $6 a gallon near Yosemite?
Yes, I believe that's true. I haven't seen the low price, but definitely the $6 in California at a couple stations. And I would agree with Joyce, just in terms of if you buy gasoline at a no-frills brand, it's not like they are putting an additive in it.
Biden could make a short-term politically unpopular choice, and maybe it wouldn't be politically unpopular, but let's assume it's politically unpopular choice to allow people to feel this gasoline price pain for longer in pursuit of using it to increase the incentive for more people to buy electric vehicles and things like that.
He's got some tough choices. He said that this move is for middle class, for the middle class. He doesn't want to see the price get too high. It's also politically very unpopular to have the price go up and have everyone blaming you for that when you're trying to head into the midterm elections next year. And you've got the slimmest available majority in the Senate, not much better one in the House of Representatives. There he will get a lot of pressure on from the environmentalists, and I think you're going to be hearing a lot more on incentives, not only in the legislation and that the infrastructure bill that passed, but other actions that the administration is going to be taking. The Department of Energy, for instance, is going to be adding 1,000 new people to take on mostly clean energy programs because of the infrastructure bill. So and those people have to be hired fairly quickly.
Listener tweets, bought a Tesla last year and no longer worry about gas. Another listener tweets, the electric vehicle incentives in the Build Back Better bill leave e-bikes behind. There's no reason I should be able to get $12,500 off a car, but I am capped at a $1,500 subsidy when buying an electric cargo bike that would remove me from a car permanently. So obviously the conversation goes on about our energy present and our energy future. We thank Timothy Gardner, energy and environment reporter for Reuters. Tim, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.